accession number 18778, reel 3.
Reel 3.
And of course, they'd rigged up this radio and was using it for a while, and then the Gestapo came and found the radio, tipped all the beds up, like, stripped the huts, all the floors up, everything, and took and smashed the radio. So a while later, the RAF came in on the night time, and they dropped a load of firebombs. And of course, it burnt a lot of the houses and buried a lot of the people underneath, because a lot of the houses, there was buildings, and then there was living underneath. And of course, after that, there was taking dead out of that Dresden for about 3 weeks on horse and cart.
Did you have to do any work, rescue work yourself?
No. They never bothered us with that, like, no.
Did they try to take revenge on you?
No, they didn't. No, they treated the Russians bad. Because we was out, going out to work one morning, and we passed a load of Russians that was out working. And one of them was digging in the ground, and he must have been digging for some potatoes, but it was frozen. And of course, a German guard happened to see him, and he came up and he just clobbered him with his rifle.
Where did he hit him?
Oh, he hit him on the head, and there was nothing you could do about it, like, you know. Oh, I just got his rifle and butted him, and that was it.
What happened to the Russian?
Oh, I've no idea after that, like.
Was he laid out?
Oh, yes, he was laid out. I mean, you know, whether he survived or what, I've no idea. But
was he just left?
Beg your pardon?
Was he just left lying?
He was just left lying there, yes. They didn't bother. Not with them. They didn't bother with the Russians, no.
Was he a Russian POW?
Yes.
What was it like when the Dresden Raid was going on?
It didn't actually bother us where we was, like. It was when we went out next day, you see, and saw the damage that was done. Like,
you went from the camp into the city?
Yes.
Why did you go into the city?
Well, because we were still doing work, like, you know, they were still sending us out to work.
What did the city look like after the raid?
Well, as I said, it was a mess with it, where the fires had been and the houses that had just burned down. I mean, I think they'd lost most of the fire brigade stuff as well, with it being firebombs, wasn't explosives. It was not the next day when the Americans came over and they dropped a couple of bombs. That was it. But all the damage was done with the RAF, with the firebombs.
What did you feel like about that?
Well, what could, you know, I mean, you felt sorry for the people, like, but I I mean, same happened to our cities, I suppose. They got bombed. And people often used to say to me, well, why did they bomb Dresden? What was there? Well, I said, if people had been there, they'd have seen a railway running 24 hours a day with tanks and guns on it going to the Russian front. Yeah. So that's actually why they decided to bomb Dresden. Yeah. They wanted to put a stop to the war as quick as they could.
Were you frightened during the air raid?
No, not actually.
How far from the city were you?
It wasn't too far, but they didn't seem to bother us where we was at all, whether they knew there was a camp there or what. But the army barracks up the road, they never bothered that. So,
do you remember the name of the place you were at?
What?
In Dresden.
No, it was just Dresden, as far as we knew, near the railway station we was.
What do you remember next?
Well, after that, later on, after a while, the Germans decided to march us out onto the road, because they thought, oh, the Russians are getting nearer and nearer. And they didn't want to get caught. And of course, we got to what was then the Sudeten border. And the guards at first, on the border, wasn't going to let us through. But in the end, they gave way and let us through. And then we got onto the road, and of course, we didn't know actually where there was marching us to, but there was marching us away what they thought was the Russians, and they just kept going on, and we was going down the road, and the guards never bothered us or anything and all of a sudden these Russian planes come over. They started strafing the roads. Of course, some of us said, right, we'll get across into the fields. There was me and two others, and we stayed in a barn overnight, and next morning Russian tanks was coming through. So we thought to ourselves, well, when we had the radio, we heard that the Americans was at Pilsner, around that area. So we thought, well, surely Pilsner, it's only about 20 miles or so from Prague, they'll be in Prague. So we thought, we'll head for Prague. We get into Prague, we come in from the old city side. Into, what was it? It was National Avenue, I think it's somewhere off where St. Wenceslas Square is. And they put us in kind of a second-rate hotel there, while we was there, we went out and we found a German lorry, and it was full of these 4 Pfennig cigarette packs of them. So we got loads of them and took them back to the hotel. And then we used to go out in the morning and take so many packs with us and go into the milk shop and offer them so many cigarettes for a carton of milk. Then go into the fleisch shop, the meat shop, and do the same there. because in this hotel, all he was getting was coffee and some bread and jam. Like while he was there, so.
Did you have to pay for the hotel?
Oh no.
Who was running the hotel?
Oh, I couldn't say, actually. Couldn't say. But
what was the attitude of the citizens of Prague towards you?
Oh, it was all right. What had happened there, actually, before we got there, they'd had an uprising somewhere, and they'd managed to capture the radio station. And of course the Germans retaliated, captured the radio station back, and they said they'd shot 300 of them, the Germans. Yeah. So they was more scared of the Russians was the Czech people. There, they had the Russians. They even had women controlling traffic with machine guns on the backs. Yeah, oh yes. And on the night, the Russian soldiers used to hang about street corners in groups, 5 and 6. And the Czech women didn't go out. Well, because they knew if they went out, they would liable to get raped.
How were the Russian troops behaving in Prague?
Well, as far as I know, we didn't see, you know, bar for, as I said, them standing about on corners on the night time, seeing if there was any women about, they didn't bother us, and we didn't bother them.
Did you ever talk to any of the Czech citizens?
Oh, yes. We went out talking to some people one time, and they invited us out, and that's where we had some goulash. First time I'd ever tasted goulash. It was a meal of goulash with them. Well, yeah. Those friendly people. Yeah. I was there about a fortnight. Then they came to take us out.
Okay.
The army came to take us out, and we had to go to a delousing camp.
This is the American army?
Yeah, yes. Oh, they came, and we had to go and get deloused, strip off like, and everything. But while I was in Prague, I'd picked up a 35 Belgic revolver, full mag up ammo like. And a fan, a bone-handled fan, beautiful it was. And I thought to myself, I'll take these home. Because when you got to the camp for delousing, you had to strip off everything. And of course, the Yanks was there. They was buying your stuff off you. Yeah, but, you know, anything to buy anything off you. So I sold the fan and I sold the revolver, like, and that was it.
Were you with friends at that time?
When?
When the Americans were seeing to you?
No, there was just different personnel, like, you know, that had been turned prisoner, and of course they was taking us to get delos, and then was on a plane to fly home.
Where was this American camp where you were being deloused?
Oh, I don't know the name. I have no idea. It wasn't far away, like.
So you flew home?
Yes, flew home, and then I was sent on leave. And I reported back to my unit after my leave break.
What condition were you in by the time you got back to England?
Reasonable condition. Reasonable.
Yeah. Did you have any after effects?
No, not really. Only, you know, just flashbacks of different incidents during the battle, like, you know, that was it.
What kind of incidents remained with you?
That was when the fellas was getting it with shrapnel, and when the sergeant died, you know. I still remember that today, like, you know.
Do you ever have nightmares about that?
Not actually, like, you know, but I just keep remembering about it.
How do you think? Sorry?
Thinking about, you know, the good men that died, and, you know, we didn't win anything.
How do you feel now about having served at Arnhem in the Second World War?
Well, I suppose somebody would have done it if I hadn't done it. So, I mean, it was just one of the places that I happened to be sent to. And that was it.
How did the Germans treat you as a POW?
Not too bad. You got your ration of bread in the morning, and then you came back, and it was more or less soup, kind of soup thing, and that on the night time for you. You know, just enough to keep you going, sort of thing.
Do you bear any grudges towards the Germans?
No, not really. I mean, let's face it. Well, I bear grudges. I mean, somebody had to go, and that was just it. After a while, they sent me down south, and of course, I was supposed to be doing basic training. whatever they call it, like, but it's not what I would call basic training. I thought it was a waste of money, but then they sent me to Palestine to join the 6th Airborne Division. And out there we had to test the 4-inch motor. And of course, when we first tested it, the first one that went placed a motor shell in, and it exploded and killed 7 men.
Were you there?
No, I wasn't there for that. After that, they had to take all the fuses out of this old ammo and put fresh fuses in. And of course, that took about a fortnight or so ago to do. Then after that, we went out to test them again. This time, you have 4 motors. 1, 2, 3, 4. The sergeant was testing for 1 and 2, and then at that time, I was made up to bombardier, and I was testing for 3 and 4. And of course, we had a good shoot. And we used to re-land the motors after use. We used to use those to re-land them. And it was me and this sergeant were practically the only two that could do the job. And he was going home. And of course, they wanted me to sign on. And they said, oh, we'll make you sergeant tomorrow. And of course, they had me mounting guard on the night, taking parades in the morning. I was actually doing a regimental sergeant's job. And I only had two stripes. But I was taking parade in the morning, as I said, mounting guard on the night time. And they was treating me like a little lord there. And kept begging me to sign on. But I said, no, I said, I've had enough. No. I often wonder whether I should have signed on, like, but still, that's them days. I thought I'd had enough after what I'd been through, what I'd seen, so.
Which year were you in Palestine?
Beg your pardon?
Which year were you in Palestine?
I was 46. I went in the beginning of 46, and I came out at the end. Well, I came out just before, but the leave that they owed me, it went up to the end of November, I think, 46, like, you know. So I was in there nearly a year.
Did you have any duties regarding the emergency in Palestine?
Yes, so we used to go out on road patrol, and that's like cut off a village maybe, and looking for any terrorists or anything. And when women went out, we had to search the baskets in case there was any arms or anything in the baskets.
Did you find anything?
No, not actually. There was only the one period when they'd kidnapped. I was in Nathania on leave. I'd got a fortnight's leave in Nathania, and I'd had a week in Nathania, and they'd kidnapped two sergeants at one of these groups. Like, there was about five gangs, Stern gang and all others, like. And they'd captured two sergeants, and they had a lorry, and it was built up in sands. And there was holler. And they did the sergeants in the bottom of this truck. Got through the roadblocks, and they hung them while I was on leave. And I was confined to the camp then, see, when that happened. They couldn't go out, so I rung back to headquarters. I said, they just opened Cyprus up as a leave camp. And I said, well, can't have a week in Cyprus, like. Oh, no, no, you can't, no. No, that was it, like. So I thought, well, that's it.
Why did they confine you to camp?
Well, because these two sergeants being hung, and, you know, there was hunting for them then. Yeah. And I thought, well, you know, they didn't want any more getting captured and maybe hung.
How did you and your comrades feel about that?
Well, we didn't like it at all, but I mean, when we went on raids and we caught anybody, we used to make them take their hats off if they had that on and stand them in the sun. Keep them in the sun for 3 or 4 hours.
What was that for?
Well, he'll stand in the sun without hat on for 3 or 4 hours when you're abroad. You know,
was that
you'll feel a bit wonky after that.
Was that because of the sergeant, you mean?
No, but yes. Oh, yes. I mean, you know. Yeah, I mean, you know, when you're having all this trouble, roadblocks and going out and everything, like, you know, that was causing trouble all the time. Like, they used to raid the aerodromes and pinch rifles and anything. They were even pouring acid on parachutes and that, like, yeah.
Was this the Jews or the Arabs?
The Jews. Them that was the Stern gang and the other gangs, like, you know. Because we was trying to control the Jews coming in, you see. Which, I mean, you couldn't catch them all. You know, I mean, all right, you maybe get some coming in, but there'd be some getting in somewhere else, like, you know, you couldn't stop them getting in.
And okay. Which unit of the which unit were you in Palestine?
300 battery, anti-tank battery. It was 6th airborne div then. I've served in 2 airborne divs.
And which area were you patrolling in and doing the searches? Do you remember the names of the places?
Not a fan. We was up off the Gaza area, and that.
So you're still in the Royal Artillery?
Yes.
As a bombardier?
As a bombardier, and I came, and in 19, after I came home, 1950, I got a letter from the War Office telling me to go to Hawick in Scotland, and I just got married, and I said, Hawick in Scotland, wonder what I'm going up there for. I thought, well, Korea had just started, I believe, then. I thought, surely I'm not going out to Korea. And when I gets up there, when we first tested the 4-2-inch mortar, it was just an ordinary base plate. They'd mobilised it and it had wheels. And it was to train AKAK regiments and other regiments up in Scotland how to use the 4-2-inch mortar.
So were they going out to Korea?
Oh yes, they would have been. They'd have been used in Korea.
There's no question of your going.
No, no. No, I was just sent up there for 15 days. I didn't know what it was for till I got up there. And I was with the Black Watch and Argyll and Sutherland Islanders.